You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com.
The tournament is here. We're talking about March Madness, folks, and Bet Online is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contests out there and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round right up until the national championship. You can access the most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices and even track your bracket real-time all the way through the tournament. Head to BetOnline today and get in on all the action. And remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, game starts here.
Hello and welcome to Absent Minded. It's Friday the 5th of April here in Europe. In Switzerland, the playoffs have started. In Sweden and Finland, the semifinals start today. We're going to get back to that later on because we're going to start talking about the Montreal Canadiens' newly found player, more or less. And we got Matt Drake here to talk about Joel Armia. Hey, what a fantastic end of the season.
I'm blown away, man. I'm blown away. Start of the year, I'll take my lumps for this. I was one of the guys, I guess, kind of leading the charge on trying to send him down to Laval. They did it, obviously. And when they sent him down, I was super happy. I think I tweeted, I'm like, all right, don't bring him back. And boy, was I wrong. Boy, was I wrong about that guy. I mean, he crushed it in Laval. He was clearly, you know, a step ahead of players at the AHL level. That was very obvious if you watched any of the Rocket games while he was down there. And it earned him a chance to get back into the NHL when injuries happened in Montreal. And since that time, he has looked like an incredibly effective middle six winger, to the point where I was saying this on the bottom 6 minutes last night. I would be pretty comfortable with him at his current dollar amount next season. With the cap going up, you could almost make an argument that he might be a little bit underpaid with how well he's playing right now. I know that sounds nuts.
This streak and work ethic and I mean, like, let's face it, we're talking about being a bubble team next year. Then you want a player like Armia getting in there.
Yeah, especially if, because like right now you're seeing what he's doing on the second line on a struggling team that's in the bottom, the basement of the Eastern Conference, right? So if you go into next year and you have him, like, let's say they get a little bit healthier, which we're expecting them to, and Armia can play on the third line next year. If he's bringing this same effort level, that tenacity on the forecheck, the penalty killing ability, that's extremely useful in a third line player. And then you know now from this season that he has the ability to step up. So if you have any injuries in your lineup, you know he could potentially come into one of those spots at some point during the year and give you some really good outs, some really good outings rather, in one of those spots. So I think he's gone from a complete liability on the Montreal Canadiens cap to in the same season becoming an absolute asset, because you know that cap's going up. He's taking up a lesser percentage next year. Clearly at this current level of play, if he can maintain it, super useful on the third line and even up above in your lineup if you need him to. So it's one of the best silver linings they could get to this season is him returning to viability, because I really think he could be super useful for them next year. And hey, if they end up not being a bubble team, I could say the same thing for the trade possibilities. If he continues this level of play, they're going to get a really good trade for him next year when the cap has gone up. Like, for sure, he's going to be somebody that other teams are going to target if the Habs are not in a playoff position come deadline time.
Indeed, and we have two players that have gone down to AHL, to Rocket, and have come back to Montreal with a little bit more of a confidence, a little bit more of a swagger, and also a little bit more maybe work ethic. I'm thinking also about Arbe Shekai, you know, being sent down for a few penalty calls that he shouldn't have taken, and therefore also learning from it. And both these players, their approach to the game and their professionalism, being sent down, doing the best of the situation, coming back up with increased confidence and increased work ethic, and getting paid for it, getting rewarded for it. That's fantastic.
Yeah, we've come a long way from it. Used to be back in the day, going down to the farm was like a problem in Montreal, right? The way that things were, I think it was just part of the culture, kind of. If somebody went down, you were expecting to just never see them back again, right? Nowadays, it's changed a little bit. I think ever since they went to Laval, it's gotten better and better and better with every passing year, where guys can go down there and they can come back looking considerably better than they did when they originally got sent down in the first place. Happened with Armia. Jack guy had a quick stint down there, came back looking fantastic. I'm excited to see them graduate some more players from down there, because it really seems like the culture that they've built with this new farm team, being so close to Montreal, is really benefiting the players. And we're seeing some other young guys that are having really nice performances. I mean, Joshua Roy started the year there, came up and looked like an absolute bona fide NHLer. Logan Mailloux is having a really good season down there. There's some players coming up through those ranks that are giving some hope for the future of this rebuild. And it just so happens that they're even able to send down some veterans and end up getting a little bit more out of them than you thought you could.
And it also must be very good as a veteran, knowing you don't have to leave your family, you don't have to leave your house. You
Oh, yeah.
you're not going to the end of the world, literally, when it was in St. John's, more or less. But you're staying in the area. You don't have to
Yeah.
shift houses. That is something we spoke about when it moved to Laval, even. But it's taken this long to really see it being implemented and being used in a progressive kind of way, rather than, they're going down to the AHL and they're done.
Yeah, it used to be like banishment, even when it was in Hamilton years ago, right? It felt like banishment. It's like you're going down to the farm. It's like, well, we're sending you off to another province and see you never, right? I think you hit the nail on the head there, man. Some of these players, especially veteran players that have families, it's got to be rough to be sent that far away from where you were originally playing. It's got to be mentally draining, and there's none of that now. So I think in Armia's case, I mean, I don't want to speak on behalf of the guy, but it seemed to me that there was something like mentally blocking him when he was playing early in the season. Because it's not like he all of a sudden forgot how to play hockey. It's just he was making some boneheaded decisions. And he gets to go down to Laval, slow things down a little bit, comes back and looks like a completely new player. Looks like the vintage version of him that the team wanted to acquire in the first place. And very deserved, I should say, on that note, nomination for him for the Bill Masterton Trophy. I don't necessarily think he's going to win it. My money would be on Jonathan Drouin winning that over in Colorado. And
And what
frankly,
a
I'm kind of
story
pulling
that
for
is,
Drouin.
and fair play to Jonathan, man. I'm taking time out for finding himself, and a long time out as well, and then having success in a new team. Great to see. I really hope he wins it as well. So
Yeah.
there's all good in many ways.
But that all being said, right, I don't think the Habs could have possibly picked a better nominee than Yoel Armia. I think what he's done this season, he deserves a ton of credit. Never once did I see an interview or anything of him, bitching, complaining, anything. He just went down, he did the work, he came back, and he's been playing fantastic ever since. I've never been happier to eat crow on one of my own articles than the one I wrote preseason, where I said, I think he's done, send him down and don't bring him back. Never been happier, honestly. And he's really proven a lot of people, myself included, wrong with how he's played this year. And he should get heaps of praise for that.
Indeed, and we're going to get back to Armia in another segment later on, but looking to the AHL, 6 games to go. They're playing tonight, I think, Friday night. So when you listen to this, there might even be 4 or 5 games left only. But they need to more or less win out. They can't lose to Belleville in the last 2 games.
Yeah, because they got Belleville chasing them, 2 points behind them. So if you look at 6 games remaining, I think, and don't quote me on this, I think their magic number there is kind of five. Like if they win five, they should be able to get into the playoffs. But that being said, if one of those losses is to Belleville, then that could throw a wrench in it. You're right, they do have Syracuse tonight. It's going to be important for them to, really, if you want to put your stamp on it and really go into the playoffs with authority, is win all six. And that's no easy task, right? You got 6 straight games.
Well, they lost
Luckily
six
for
straight at
them,
one point, so why not win six straight?
yeah, why not? right? That's the thing, right? It's like you always talk about, even in the NHL, you talk about wanting to go into the playoffs on a high note, especially for teams that are not, like, if you're the division winner, right, then you don't really care if you lose your last couple of games at the end of the season, because you won the division, right? You're the best team all year in that division. But if you're a team that's like pushing at the end of the season and you need the last couple of games to get in, then you don't want to get in on a loss either. So, I mean, going in on a 6-game or a 5-game streak there at the end would be a heck of a way to do it. And tonight's a pretty big game for them as well, because they've got Syracuse and it's a back-to-back as well. So they're going to be playing the next night. So really, they got to be up for this one. They've had some days off. They haven't played since the 30th of March. So hopefully they come in energized and they can, you know, take this back-to-back and run with it, and then hopefully ride that all the way into the playoffs.
And looking at the playoff situation in different areas of the world, both North America and Europe, it seems kind of difficult to get players in until the playoffs have started. They can't get Hudson in. They can get Hudson in for the last two games, and they could get Engström in for the last two games potentially, but that will have to be a Concorde flight, more or less, in across the Atlantic. Sorry for that. It's a tough situation. David Reinbacher is obviously there, and he will get heaps of playing time in order to take care of the defensive situation. And Logan Mayo probably a couple of heavy shots on the power play, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, Mayu's a great power play weapon. Obviously, anybody who watched him through junior, you know that's his bread and butter, right? The power play, he loves to unleash that shot. He's got a great snapshot, great slap shot, any kind of variety that he wants from the point, he can score from them. I would be very interested if the Rocket can win the next couple of games, and if Lane Hudson's season finishes. I mean, he's in the Frozen Four right now, so he's got potentially two games left as long as they win this next one. I would be very interested to see if they could insert him into the lineup at the end of the year there, if, of course, his season ends and he's willing to sign. But I think the Rocket have enough weapons as it stands to do a little bit of damage. So that being said, Engström, I guess I got to defer to you on that one. What do you think is the likelihood of him even coming over at the end of this season?
Well, it depends. I expect we got to get back to Engström later, but I expect that series to go over for, it won't be 4-0 to either team. So, and especially not to Växjö. Rögle has found their game, really. So I would expect him to be able to make it for the playoffs if they get in. But that is the situation, really. I have a thread on Twitter where I talk about the playoff situation for the Montreal Canadiens pros in Europe. And, well, there are two players that are in for you know, a good chance of winning the championship. Let's say it like that and get back to it later. But there could be reinforcements on the go. We mentioned Hudson, obviously. It would be great to see him pairing up with Reinbacher, as we saw in summer. But also we need to remember, both of them need to be signed, both Engström and Hudson, and then they need to be able to get to Montreal or Belleville in order to actually participate in the games as well. It's not just signing them. It's infrastructure and availability of flights, etc. I'm sure that Montreal will be able to hack it if they want to, but you know, there are, you can, for a 7-game series, you can't expect it to finish 4-0.
Yeah, well, there's also Joshua Huet, right? And they did paper him down before the deadline to do so. So the only thing I don't know, and we don't have a whole lot of information on this, is when exactly he's getting back from his hand injury. I haven't seen any news on that in a little while. They've been pretty quiet on that front. So I don't know. It kind of doesn't look great right now if we haven't heard anything that he would magically be back for them in the playoffs. But the Habs did give themselves that out to give a little bit more reinforcements. We know the Habs aren't going to be in the playoffs. If they were, I don't think Joshua Huet would even be close to an option for Laval, because he's been playing that well. But because
unless they paper him in order for it to be, you know, a couple of games where he can find his game before being called up again.
Yeah, and but because he's been papered down, we know the Habs season is coming to an end. They've already been officially eliminated at this point. We can expect that if he's healthy, they're going to use him. And I'd like to see it, but I also am very leery about playing players in this organization when they have any kind of an injury. So if he's not 100%, I would say do not put him out there. It's not worth it. But if he's 100%, he's good to go. I would absolutely like to see him with Laval because I think he would give them a huge boost, a huge boost. He was close to a point per game with Laval while he was down there. So definitely a player that they could use if he's going to be available.
Yeah, and then you have the other option, you know, if you're being a little bit cautious, you remember what they did with Slafkovský, who had a long season as well, might be worth, you know, giving him the time to recover and get, you know, head on into next season and be ready for that. Pros and cons with everything as usual. Pros and cons with not selecting Hudson for the Hobie Baker last year was evident when the Hobie Baker was shortlist was released. And he wasn't included on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna irk some Habs fans, honestly. And I'm sure Lane Hudson doesn't feel super happy about that either. But when you look at the nominees, I mean, they picked Macklin Celebrini from his team, who's obviously, you know, the consensus number one overall in this summer's draft. I think. And I don't want to speak for the selection committee there in the NCAA, but I think they do operate a little bit on popularity contests. When they pick some of these awards, you see it across sports as well. You see it with the Heisman Trophy in football, for instance. They're not necessarily picking the absolute best player. And I think Lane Hudson has surely done enough in his time at BU to earn a Hobie Baker. I think for us as Habs fans, we shouldn't be too upset that he's not getting one because we should just look at the performances that he's put out there and say, all right, this guy's done enough to win it. We don't care if he wins it. Let's bring him over to Montreal and let's see if we can win him some hardware in the NHL.
Yeah, and also his season hasn't been as outstanding this year, but they haven't had to defer to him in the same way they did last year. So you know, he falls a little bit in the shadow. He's worked on his defensive game. We saw that in the World Juniors. Really impressive. I think he will be. It would be great to see him in the AHL. Obviously, I'm not sure that they can make it. I'm not sure that if he signs that they can go down either. There's a lot of, you know, bonkers situation in regards to papers, et cetera, et cetera. But hopefully we get to see him play pro in one way or another. There is obviously an option for him and some of the other guys. We've spoken with Armia, we've spoken or about Armia, we've spoken about Hudson. Elias Anderson would probably be included in that conversation as well. And that's the World Juniors coming up. Or yeah, the World Championships, not the World Juniors. But the World Championships in Prague, you know, great destination. Kid you not. Go there. I'm not sponsored by Prague, but go there once in your life and stay.
We
You
are
don't need
open
a
to
one-way
well,
ticket.
we're if anyone in the Prague government is listening though, we're open to sponsorship. You want to give
Yeah.
us a trip out there, we'll come visit you and drink some of your beer. I know you guys got great beer over there. And we'll read some ads for you on the podcast, so feel free.
Some of my happiest days have been in Prague, though. So I won't take much to convince me to help out. But yeah, I can understand people looking to the World Championships as well. If Laval and obviously, you know, with the Olympics coming up and NHL players being targeted for that, you could potentially see Suzuki going for Canada as well.
Yeah, Suzuki, I think as of right now, his hope would be as an extra, which in and of itself is such a vote of confidence for like to be an extra on Team Canada is a wild vote
Yeah,
of confidence.
not
So you
a
have to
team,
be
an extra in the World Championships, though, but in the Olympics.
no world championships. If he goes there, he's going to be, you know, a focal point. He'll probably be a top six center
Yeah.
for Team Canada at that. But for the Olympics, yeah, I think he's absolutely on the radar to be an extra forward. And his versatility, I think could potentially even push him into the lineup depending on how the camp goes there for Team Canada. We'll see, right? Semyon Moldambeau, I think, is a sneaky pick for the Olympics as well. Is he going to be the starting goaltender? I don't know about that. But goaltending is not a position of huge strength in Canada as it has been in previous years. So I wouldn't count Semyon Moldambeau out. I think he might be one of the three goaltenders. I'd be very surprised if he's not one of the goaltenders at the World Championships, having been there before. So, yeah,
and
you,
we
might,
know,
you might
we know
actually
that
have
Prague
some
is
Habs
always
presence.
drawing in. You know, there's one thing going to Helsinki, you know, where the sign actually at the airport says welcome to hell. But Prague is one of those destinations. Spring comes early. Beer is cheap. Central Europe, you get all the culture and fantastic scenery as well. You know, I there's always more NHLers going to Prague than any other city in Europe when the World Championship is there. So that's something to look forward to as well, to extend the season a little bit and not just go full draft when it's all over. I don't see Engström going to the World Championships for Sweden, but you know, Armia for Finland. I think Kapanen might be on the radar, the way he's playing in the playoffs, obviously, and Armia definitely. He's been part of the Finnish World Championship team before, so. You know, for Europeans, we grew up with the World Championship being the one of the highlights of the year. It's not to the same degree anymore, but if you grew up with it, and you know, I think I've spoken about this before, that Nick Lidström wasn't really famous in Sweden until he did that goal against Finland in the Olympics, because he was never playing in the national team. And until you played in the national team, you're not really a star in Sweden. So there is that, and you know, people go back, and if you have the opportunity, you know, to win something at the end of the season, you want to go there.
Yeah, I mean, it's also really valuable experience for a lot of players, right?
We saw Hudson last year, you know, making some mistakes but learning from it.
Yeah. So the young players, I think it's a great opportunity for you. You mentioned, you know, just the desire of players to go to Prague in the first place. For sure, I think that's a big attraction for the more veteran players, because they're not necessarily looking to develop their game, but they want to keep playing a little bit. And obviously, it's a fun place for them to go. So, of course, they would want to. But I think really for the young players,
you know,
yeah,
as well,
young players, great chance for you to continue developing your game against, you know, not necessarily the top. Competition that you're going to see across, you know, in international competitions, but for sure, a really good set of games that you get to go and play towards the end of your NHL season. That's like, you know, a really good development opportunity. So I'd be stoked to see some more Habs players go there. You know, that being said, I would almost say Joshua Huai would be a great option for Team Canada. They know him very well. You know, Hockey Canada has seen him be a key part of two World Junior teams. I would say if he's healthy and he's good to go from his injury, I'd be very interested in him taking a shot and going over there and developing his game a little bit further.
Indeed, and I'm not sure what, you know, rink size is going to be in Milano Cortina, but most likely it will be European rink size, and that means a little bit, you know, at least get a feel for it in a couple of World Championship games as well. Looking at the European playoffs, Kalpa has played about 2 minutes and is already, you know, setting things up in Tapparas zone. So my thinking in regards to this might be completely off, but it's very important. Kalpa comes in as a seventh seed, plays the first seed in the playoffs right now in the semifinals. And, you know, they need to win the first game. In order for this to really swing their way, get back the home field advantage. Kapanen is on the first line. Really, really interesting. As of now, he leads the Liga playoffs in scoring. 5 goals, 5 assists. Really impressive season. It's been a season of two halves. So I'm going to probably write exactly that sentence when we look into his grade of the year. But coming out of the military service, obviously a little bit behind in his training, working fantastic to get it done, and finally finding a secure place with good line mates in the Kalpa lineup.
Which is pretty good to hear, I would say. You know, a former second round pick, there's, you know, you don't have a ton of guarantees in the second round, but you're also hoping to pick some gems there. So I guess what everyone's probably curious about, and I'll ask you because you've watched it. I haven't watched any of their games in the playoffs, but with what he's done this season so far, you think, like, what would you say his ceiling is moving into the NHL?
Third line, center or winger. You know, he's kind of big, so you could use him as a winger as well with, you know, being able to take some of that center responsibility. If you have a center that it may be more offensive minded, his defensive game has always been secure. We saw that in the World Championships, or World Junior Championships. I keep mixing them up, but you know, it's really, really good in that regard. But I also feel that, you know, the offensive upside, I remember talking to the Montreal Canadiens scout crew about Kapanen when we watched him together at one point, and we were all saying he squeezes his stick too hard, and it seems like he stopped squeezing that stick too hard now. Great to see, but you might have to, he has that really good snapshot, and you might have to build a line around that a little bit more, maybe than just putting three good guys together. You might have to consider, like, think through the lineup, who's going to play with whom, rather than, you know, these are the top three, these are the next three, and these are the next three after that. So, but, you know, this would be a great guy to have on a fourth line as well. And, you know, when you get into the playoffs, you're going to need some players on ELCs, and Kapanen is going to be one of them, I think, especially if it happens in the next 3 years, 4 years, maybe. Question is, if he goes over to, I expect him to go over to AHL this year or next year. And but rumor has it that his dad, who is a GM in Timrå in SHL, has asked him to sign for them for another year, and Montreal has his rights for another year. So could be smart to make that middle step between AHL and SHL as of now, and use those 4 years in Europe that Montreal has their his rights, and then sign him and bring him over in that regard. I don't think he will do a Lekkonen where he would go directly into an NHL team. But the question is, which NHL team is it? Do you need some of those guys on the fourth line and develop them there in NHL, or do you want them to play top line minutes in AHL? He looks like a top line center in AHL.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Is I'm glad that you said, you know, that he also has the capability of playing the wing, because you look at the Habs, you know, their organizational depth chart right now, center has become a bit of a position of strength. Like, when Kirby Dach is healthy, where do you really have space to fit somebody in? So if he's capable of playing the wing, that's going to benefit him whenever he makes the jump, because they've already got, obviously, Nick Suzuki at one, Kirby Dach, you figure, is two. Alex Newhook's looking pretty good at center right now, but he's probably moving to the wing. Owen Beck's going to be turning pro next season. You still have Jake Evans. Like, at some point, either one of the guys that they've already got or that's coming up is going to have to move on to another organization to free up space at center, or somebody like Kapanen comes over, they got to play the wing, right? So versatility. You know,
I can see the black hole with Kapanen and Beck and another defensive-minded player, where, you know, often opponent's lines just go out and dice.
Which, there's a lot of value to that, man. We saw what Philippe Danault did in that playoff run for the Montreal Canadiens. He was barely putting the puck in the net. He had what? How many points did Philippe Danault have?
Well, he passed to Lekkonen, so we got into the finals. So, you know, I don't care.
Yeah, true. Lekkonen was, oh man, I miss him. But you see the value in play like that. Like, if you have that ability to absolutely just close off the ice, and offense just dies when you're out there, there's value in that. There's absolutely value
in
that.
And if you get that on an entry-level deal with two players, you know, you can put whoever you want as a third line, you know, put Armia out there, you know, then you're fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? Armia has been excelling this season in particular with his forechecking, his ability to create offense out of seemingly nothing. So you get him out there with some defensive-minded players. You know, they're choking off the neutral zone. They're making it impossible for the opposition to do anything. And then you got Armia, who can dig a puck out randomly, and all of a sudden a nothing play turns into a scoring chance. That kind of thing can go a long way. Those kind of plays, they add up over an 82-game season, and they can really put the Habs in a much better position. So it's going to be exciting the next few years.
I know you're on your way home for Friday night or Saturday morning. You might have gone out and bought some, you know, things in bottles. Coca-Cola, obviously. But if you do, be sure to lower your volume a little bit. We're going to go to a quick commercial break here. Yeah, and I mean, like you, we've spoken about Armia, we've spoken about Kapanen, we've spoken about Hudson, obviously. Looking towards the playoffs that we haven't spoken about, we need to mention Vincent Rohrer, who is in the, the best team in the Swiss League right now anyway. But 2-0 up in the semifinals against Zug, and looking set to be partake in that finals for Pozirik. Also looking very solid in order for it to become a title down the line. Zürich hasn't won in a long time, but it's not the season we expected for Rohr when he went back to Europe. He has outshone everything. If he manages to win a title in that regard or in that season on the third line, fantastic. I know Coach Crawford loves him, his work ethic, his hockey IQ. He uses him defensively as well, but maybe more with an offensive upside. He's lost his position on the second power play unit, but to a certain Sven Andre Gero, though. So, you know, there's always that.
Yeah, blast from the past.
Yeah, but it's an interesting development curve for Rohrer, and it would be really interesting. I think they will win the title down the line, but it will be really interesting to see what Zürich does with his role next year, next season. That's what I'm looking for when it comes to Rohrer right now. I might be looking for different things in regards to other prospects, but for Vincent Rohrer, I'm looking for what will he do next year.
Mm. Yeah, you know, I liked his game. I saw him a few times last year with the Ottawa 67s. I liked his game. I got to be honest, I don't watch the Swiss League, so I'm too busy watching NHL, some AHL. And
we all do sacrifices here. We don't watch. I don't watch juniors in Canada. Yeah. Obviously.
It's impossible. That's why whenever I see somebody that like puts together a list of like draft eligible prospects and they're ranking everybody from like every single league in the world, I'm like, where do you find the time to do that?
Right.
Hadi does that. I don't know how he finds the time, man.
God bless. He also has a girlfriend. I need to say this. Commiserations to Hadi's girlfriend because he's not spending enough time with you.
He probably makes her watch so much hockey. It's not even funny.
She's probably the second best person in the world to you know, draft eligibles. Well, third. We got David Saint-Louis out there as well.
Yeah, my wife walks by my office and hears me watching a hockey game. She goes, "What are you watching?" And I'll tell her that I'm watching a WHL game at like 11 p.m. at night. And she's like, "What's wrong with you? You're watching 18-year-olds play hockey at 11 at night." Because I love it, all right? And Hattie's girlfriend, if you're listening, you know, he loves it. And he does a great job. I don't know how people find the time for that. So back to Rohrer there. I don't know. I'll put it to you. Do you think he took a step forward this year?
Absolutely. You have to remember that, you know, he went to a pro league, arguably, you know, the top team in some ways. It's difficult this because the top team in Switzerland really should win Champions Hockey League because of, you know, money and the players that are there. But this, it's less structured than the SHL. So the top two, three teams would probably be top two or top five teams in the SHL. Top six, at least, they go directly into the playoffs. Whereas the bottom Swiss teams, you know, a certain Klaten, as an example, would probably be lower than the bottom team in the SHL.
Okay.
So the discrepancy is like the SHL is tighter as a league and more structured, whereas it's a more open, flowy game in Switzerland, but the top three teams, Davos, Bern, and especially Zürich, has a budget that outstrips the Swedish clubs completely. But then you have more Swedish players that want to play back home in Sweden for family reasons and, you know, playing for the club they love and stuff like that.
Nice. So it's good to hear. I mean, it's always nice to hear somebody takes a step forward. I mean, a player like him too, especially guys undersized, I think you want to take your sweet time and, you know, let him have his development outside of the NHL.
And I think he was drafted on paper, not from 67s, but from Zurich. He was on loan to Ottawa at the time. So he's a European player, which means they've got 4 years to sign him.
Yeah, because he was picked in 2022, right? So I don't know if he was on loan, then I think you're right. I think they do get those 4 years. We might need to double check that, but yeah, I'd say take your sweet time, right? We've learned before about like with Kotkaniemi, for instance, like bringing a guy over too early,
Hey,
you can
last
do
year at
it.
this time we were sitting saying we brought Slafkovský over too
Slafkovský,
early,
yeah.
and we
Well,
might have to, I might have changed my words on that one, right?
that's what I'm saying, right? You can do it. You can bring a guy over early, and like it might work, it might not. And
Also,
you know,
development with
they've
Kotkaniemi was different than Slafkovský, though. You had a better coach now, you have better GM
Oh, for
and front
sure.
office. So,
For sure.
there are lots of difference here. And one thing you can look at in regards to this is that they sent Kotkaniemi home and said build muscle, and he built muscle on his upper body, which raised his center of gravity, which made him easier to tip over, even if he got more muscles. Look at when
Yeah.
Slafkovský built muscles, his legs.
Yeah.
You don't push him over anymore. He looked a little
No,
bit,
he's a
like a
tank.
tadpole last year, but this year he's just solid.
Yeah, absolute tank. And he might hit 50 points, which at this time last year, if you said he's going to hit 50 or he's going to be flirting with 50, I think a lot of people would have said you were crazy.
Yeah, they would have sent us to, some special house somewhere down the line.
Yeah.
In SHL, though, if any fans try to sneak off and have another window on their computer screen, the game to watch is really Växjö Rögle starting tonight. Finland plays two semifinals at the same time. Sweden plays one every day, rather. You got to watch Rögle Växjö. Rögle coming into this to the playoffs, absolute belter, has won six games straight. First winning the play-in in two, then winning against the top-seeded team in Sweden, Färjestad, in four straight games. So they've been on rest. They've shored up their defense, and Engström has really been that defensive stalwart that we was hoping him to be. But even taking a bigger step forward than I expected, especially with the season that Rögle had. I mean, we were comparing his season and Rögle's season to Clauthen and Rheinbacher's. So, but looking at where they ended up, and now they're in the semifinals, and a lot of experts here in Sweden say, this is going to go down to six, seven games, and I'm there. I think Växjö wins it in six games, but it's going to be tight. Goal differential would be so. I mean, like, it might be atrocious hockey games to watch, because they're playing very structured hockey, both teams right now. So it might be low scoring events, but take a look at Engström in front of the net, along the boards, in the corners, being that defensive defender that we didn't really expect after his outbreak of offense last year.
Yeah, you need those players too, right? Like, I think people like to dump on that kind of hockey where you play super structured, very tight defensively. But let's not forget those 2000s Devils teams. They might have been the most boring NHL teams to watch ever, but they had some success, didn't they?
Yeah, well, they played the 1-3-1, didn't they?
Yeah, they were a trap team,
Yeah.
absolutely a trap team. But you know, there is a lot of structure to playing a trap that effectively. And there is, I think if you look at Adam Engstrom, I mean, I don't think anybody is going, all right, we want Adam Engstrom to come over and be Cale Makar, right? If and when Adam Engstrom comes over, I think what people are looking for is precisely that, is reliable defensive hockey. And of course, his ability to
After
chip in
last
points
year, I
at the
think
other
a lot
end.
of us were looking at him like, being more offensive minded, but he has taken that step. He's been forced into it, like playing with Kapla with Viljanen and with others. He has had to take in the role of the defensive player in his own end rather than the offensive that he was used to playing last year. I think this has been a great year for his development. But as you say, you want these players that can do both.
Yeah. And I think if he comes over, that's what's going to help him get into the lineup, right? Is you can play, you know, within a structured system and you can limit a lot of opportunities against, but you have that ability in your back pocket there where I can turn that into offense as well. right? I mean, you get defensemen as well. Like they already have a Mike Matheson on the team, right? Mike Matheson makes quite a few defensive errors, but you forgive those errors because of what he's able to do in the offensive zone. A guy like Engstrom comes
another one
over,
coming up, or two other ones coming up with Hudson Logan and Mayhew.
Yeah, Logan Mayhew, great example. Lane Hutson, great example. So Adam Engstrom, where he can fit if he wants to crack this roster towards the end of the rebuild, is precisely that, a strong defensive presence, but also with the ability, right, to when the puck goes up ice, you can chip in there as well.
Oh, my goodness.
Something happened.
Yeah. Sorry, Kalpa just scored a very weak call from the ref. So they got a box play situation, steals the puck, 2-1, easy goal in. This is exactly what Kalpa needed to make sure that this series goes on. Wasn't Kapanen though, but this will open up opportunities for Kapanen down the line. Great, great play. And the fact that I dislike the Tapper coach, Richard Grönborg, helps a little bit too, obviously. But we want a long playoff for Kapanen to learn and see what he can do when he faces top teams. Sorry for that. We're going live here.
No worries.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, like going back to defense, the good thing for Engstrom is also that he's played the second half of the season on his offside. So he can play both sides. And I think that will give him more opportunities
down
the line.
That's huge, because they've struggled with that in Montreal at times where they got to push somebody to their offside. You see Caden Gooley, he's really, he's a player. He's a good example where I think he's not best on his offside. You really want to get him back to his natural side. And again, Engstrom looking to fit in. It's like I said, that capable defensive hockey, ability to chip in at the offensive end. If he can play both sides, man, that opens up opportunities for him. It's going to be really interesting the next couple of years to see how they whittle it down, because they're going to have to probably move some guys out.
Yeah, they will at one point or another. We've spoken about the center position, the defensive positions are you're going to get a hole for some of them. And
yeah,
as much as we love players, one of them will have to go, and you're going to get a ridiculous reward out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's just the simple math is there's too many of them, right? There's too many guys right now. And so they're going to have to move on to some guys. And hopefully what they can do there is maybe improve the forward group a little bit. I'd be looking how can we use some of that defensive depth to pick up some help on the wing. Maybe some
offensive skill, really.
Some offensive skill that they
because
don't necessarily.
We mentioned Kapanen and Beck as well, you know, strong defensive players. Sure, yeah. They're scoring at their level now, but can they keep up that in the NHL? Probably not. So you're looking at their defensive game as their strengths.
Yeah, and what's the one thing that Habs fans have been clamoring for years is elite offensive talent. Well, you know, you're not going to be able to trade Jordan Harris for Connor Bedard, right? So you're not going to get a generational talent out of this, but you can use that depth to, what's the Moneyball quote that Jared likes to use all the time, recreate it in the aggregate.
Yeah.
And try to get more offensive talent, because at the end of the day, you're trying to get to a certain goal differential, a certain win to loss differential, so that you can have enough points to get to the playoffs. And then you want your team to be built from the top down to be able to compete.
Or right? You're looking for that player that will be the third part in that new hook Dach line, you know?
And you might that's have Joshua Y right now.
Well, right now, but you know, he might be gone as well. We don't know what happens.
We don't. And that's what's exciting about this rebuild, I think, is there's a lot left to do, but they've got the pieces there to
figure it out. You might have to give up some fan favorites. I don't think, you know, Šekai is probably, if you look at the defenders, Šekai is the one that you're going to get the most for right now. You're probably not going to be on the block. But at one point or another, you're looking at, you know, the PK Weber trade in a way. You might have to do that in order to make your team better long term.
Well, nobody wants to hear that, I think, but yeah, you brought up Jack Eye, so we might as well address it. There's a strong possibility that he ends up being one of those defenders on the move, just because he has so much value, right? There's not a lot of defenders that can do what he does that are actually very, very capable as hockey players, offensive minded, pretty good in the defensive zone, very physical, and they can also beat the absolute crap out of somebody on your team when the need arises for that to happen. That's something that other teams put a lot of value on, and there's a good to fair chance that they get some real sexy offers to trade him away. So, you know, I love Jack Eye. I'd love to see him stay with the Montreal Canadiens, but you're right. That's a player that may absolutely just warrant getting an offer that they can't refuse that helps this team get to the next step.
I think I'd be on the record, and I think that Jack Eye will stay. I think that the fan favorite, the steps he's taken this year, let's be honest with that as well, has really made him an integrated part into this lineup. But on the other hand, then at one point or another, you get that offer and you have to take it.
Yeah. If the offer comes, then,
But on the other hand, you can always ask for more. And if they don't agree to that, then you say no.
Yeah. Then we're happy keeping the player that we got. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Eriksson in Växjö. So it's a Växjö, Rögle, Eriksson versus Engström semifinal. I think it will go, as I said, to six games. What should people look for in regards to Eriksson? He was inserted into the second line due to injuries, coming up from Hockey Allsvenskan straight into the second line, playing about 13, 14 minutes a game, a little less in one of the games, but more or less around 13 minutes. What we all want to see is him getting his first SHL goal. He's got a couple of assists or six or seven assists, I think. But you know, getting that goal, he's shown he can score on the lower level, on the lower professional level in Sweden. We need to see him score on the pro level now. It also, you know, a little bit like Rohrer, he sets up the next season right now. And I think that is the important bit, you know, use this playoffs. Last year, he was on the ice for 2 minutes. He's already broken that. He got a winner's medal for that. Now he's playing a lot more. He's going to get opportunities, get that goal, get that winner's medal. And the good thing is we're going to have a Habs prospect no matter what in the final, because Eriksson or Engström will go through.
Yeah, so I guess it'll keep you going with the EPRs, right?
Well, they're on hold right now. We're doing the grading of the different prospects, and Valachin is coming up next time. Anyway, I'm not sure when, but I got to call in some voodoo masters, you know, goalkeepers, people that knows about goalie development, for some help. So, but it's half written, the article, and it will come out sooner rather than later.
Yeah, that's goaltenders for you, right? It's they're the hardest to evaluate of any position.
Well, Primo is an example of that, obviously.
So. Yeah, a really good one.
But there we have it. You've been listening to Absent Minded. You've been listening to Hong Kong's fan favorite when it comes to ice hockey podcast, Matt Drake and Patrick Beckley. Thank you so much for listening.
This episode was brought to you by Bet Online.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.